Chris Barker. How do you do, Reverend Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Googe, as well. And the better for seeing you.
And how is your charge getting on over the way? In the chambers that I have the pleasure of recommending to you as vacant and eligible.
Most comfortable. He's living as a student should, with only books for company.
His books, sir?
No, mine, I must confess. Still, as I'm to continue to give him tuition...
You're a good man, Chris Barkle. The sort of man we all would wish as a friend.
You honour me, sir. But since Neville's guardian, Mr. Honeythunder, has washed his hands of him, I'm obliged to act in that capacity myself.
You have spoken with that gentleman?
I have. I did not leave his house till I'd voiced my opinion of him.
Bravo. Bravo.
His method of argument appalls me. He will choose as subject a known evil, such as war or famine or poverty, propose some half-baked and ill-conceived solution, and if one objects to his solution, accuses one of being in favour of the general evil. It's quite intolerable. I fear I lost my temper. The man is not worth such a lapse.
Neville Landless is fortunate indeed to have such a champion. You will see him again before you return.
We arranged to dine together at the station tonight before I catch the train.
You're returning to Cloistram?
Yes.
How have things been there these past few months?
Quite quiet. Edwin's disappearance is stale news now.
Mr. Jasper has ceased to mention it?
He still swears he will not discuss the matter till he's solved the murder of his nephew and brought the murderer to justice.
He's convinced it is murder.
He is.
Do you see the gentleman often?
Well, I saw him this morning.
Where, may I ask?
Outside the cathedral.
Did he tell you he was contemplating a journey?
No. Why should he?
Because he is here in Staple Inn.
What?
Believe me, he's in my eye at this moment. And he don't look at all agreeable.
Where?
Pray step behind me into the shadow and cast your eye at the second floor landing window of the house opposite.
Good Lord, you're right.
Now, what would you say he was up to?
I can only think he hopes that you will lead him to Neville.
Or that you will, Reverend Sir.
He aims, then, to haunt him and plague his life.
One is forced to think so. I think if you agree that you should excuse my getting up to see you out, but leave as swiftly as you may through the side door.
Yes, of course.
I leave it to your discretion whether you should warn Mr. Neville, but ignorance may lead the young man into considerable danger.
You cannot believe Mr. Jasper intends to harm him.
I have observed Jasper closely on several occasions besides the present one, and I have to tell you, as an angular man, that there is little I would put past him. Very little indeed.
Rally. Rally, that's the word. Fight for it, Neville.
If I were dying, sir, I feel as if a word from you would rally me. If my pulse had stopped, I feel as if your touch would make it beat again.
It's all very well. But for the present, I should feel more content if I were to see a ruddier touch to your cheek. And some evidence that you occasionally allow the sun to shine upon you.
I don't like to be seen on the streets. Not yet. I have not forgotten the looks people gave me in Cloistram after I'd quarrelled with Drood. How much worse will they be now?
But no one knows you in London.
I still feel marked and tainted. I can only bring myself to go out under cover of darkness. But I shall conquer that fear little by little, I promise.
Good.
I must not live forever as a guilty man when I know I am no such thing.
Trust to time and circumstance, Neville. Mm. All will come right at last.
I believe it and hope I may live to know it.
Next week you'll cease to be alone. We'll have a devoted companion.
I look forward to it every hour of the day. And yet I feel it's a dull place for my sister to live in, with no suitable friend or society.
You need a woman's feeling, sense and courage. All these Miss Helena has in abundance. I've come to recognize her qualities more and more these past few months. If anyone in the world can save you, she can.
I know it, and shall do my best to be worthy of her.
Well, now I must leave you. My train departs in 5 minutes.
I'll see you safely aboard.
No. Tell me one thing. When you walk hereabouts at night, do you ever feel you're being followed?
No.
Well, just now I caught a glimpse in the crowd of one that I think may have it in mind to become your shadow.
Who?
I'll not say till I'm sure. But go a long way back to your lodging tonight. and look behind as often as you can to frustrate his purpose. Will you promise me this?
Gladly. If there's one so foolhardy as to dog my footsteps tonight, he shall have a knowledge of half London before he's done.
Landless.
Who the devil are you?
Tartar's the name. Didn't mean to give you a fright, my dear fellow, but since you were in the way of talking to yourself, I thought I'd better speak before I had something I should.
Do you always perch on people's windows?
Seldom, sir, seldom. That I do it at all is due to the peculiar circumstance of our adjoining rooms. To get to your door, I have to descend to the street, turn the corner and mount again. It's quicker to come via the roof.
Are those your beans growing outside?
You've noticed them.
Well, I can hardly avoid it.
Runners, scarlet. The nasturtiums and marigolds are mine, too. I say, do you think you could invite me in?
Of course. Step inside, Mr. Tartar.
I'm glad you like my garden aloft here. If you'd like a little more of it, I could throw out a few lines and stays between my windows and yours, which the runners would gladly take to, I'm sure. And as for the flowers, I could shove some boxes along to your gutter with a boat hook and draw them back again when they wanted watering or gardening. It wouldn't be any trouble.
You're very kind.
Not at all, not at all. I ought to apologise for looking in so late, but having noticed, excuse me, that you generally walk at night, I thought I'd inconvenience you least by awaiting your return. I'm always afraid of inconveniencing busy men, being an idle man myself.
I should not have thought it, to look at you.
No? Oh, I take it as a compliment. In fact, I was bred in the Royal Navy, and was first lieutenant when I quitted the service.
Why did you leave?
An uncle left me his property on that condition. He'd been disappointed in a naval career, and that was his revenge, I suppose. So I accepted fortune and turned my back on glory.
Lately, I presume?
Well, I had knocked about the world for some time, you know. 12 or 15 years, being burnt brown by the tropic sun. I've been here 9 months. Mm-hmm. I chose to live up here because I thought I should feel more at home in a small place, where I could knock my head against the ceiling once in a while. I served last on a corvette, you see. Besides, I had no wish to turn luxurious all at once.
I see.
But I've talked quite enough about myself. What of you, Mr. Landless? From the little I've observed, I've thought you, rather too studious and delicate. May I ask if there's anything wrong with your health?
I have lately undergone some mental distress, which has stood me in the stead of illness.
Pardon my curiosity. Now I must see to my beans.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Mr. Tartar, don't do that. You make me quite giddy. You'll be dashed to pieces.
All well, all taut and trim. Those lines and stays shall be rigged before you turn out in the morning. I'll be off now, Mr. Landless, and take the shortcut home. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Tartar. Good night.
Your fried cell, sir, and your pint of sherry.
Ah, thank you, waiter. One moment.
Sir?
Can you tell me if there's a fair lodging for a single buffer to be found in these parts?
I'm sure of it, sir.
Yes, I require something old. My name is... Take down my hat for a moment from that peg, will you?
Sir?
Now look inside it. What do you see written there?
Datchery.
Now you know my name. Datchery. Dick Datchery. And hang the hat up again.
Yes, sir.
As I was saying, something old is what I should prefer. Something odd and out of the way. Something cathedrally, perhaps.
Well, now, for something cathedrally, you should visit Mrs. Tope. She's the likeliest party to conform in that line.
Who is this Mrs. Tope?
Well, the verger's wife here. She has rooms let to the choirmaster and all sorts.
Choirmaster, eh? Oh, well, I'm sure a choirmaster is a man to see himself comfortably lodged. Yes, I shall call on Mrs. Tope after breakfast tomorrow.
Winnie Waldine! Winnie Waldine! Hit him again! That made a dent in his wall.
Hey, you boys, stop that at once. Let the sheep be. Can't you see you've lamed the poor creature?
You lie! He went and lamed himself. I've seen him do it. I gave him a shy as a witty warning not to go a-bruising his master's mutton no more.
Yeah, come here, boy.
I'll come when you can catch me.
Well, stay there, then, and show me which is Mrs. Tope's.
How can I stay here and show you which is Mrs. Tope's? Where Mrs. Tope's is t'other side the cathedral, over the crossings around ever so many corners, eh? Stupid, yeah.
Well, show me where it is, and I'll give you something.
Oh. Come on, then. Through here.
What is this place?
What's he look like? It's a burying ground.
What was the sheep doing here in the first place?
Same as in the second place, having stones shied at him. There. You see that window and door?
That's Mrs. Tope's.
You lie. It ain't. That's Jasper's.
Indeed.
Yeah, and I ain't going no nearer him, I tell you.
Why not?
Because I ain't going to be lifted off my legs and have me braces bust and be choked. Oh. Not if I knows it, and not by him. Wait till I set a jolly good flint a-flying at the back of his jolly old head some day. There, t'other side to Jasper's. There's the door you're looking for with the name on the hovel plate.
Good. Now, see, here's a shilling. Now, you owe me half of that.
You lie. I don't owe you nothing. I've never seen you.
You owe me half because I have no sixpence in my pocket. Next time we meet, you shall do something else for me.
All right, give us old.
Here. Now, what is your name and where do you live?
Deputy. Traveller's Tuppenny. Across the green. You're stupid! Yeah!
They are not large rooms, Mr.
Datchery, madam.
They are not large and there is little light. But I think they could be made very comfortable.
It is a little close, too, I think.
The door there can be left open when you have no wish to be private.
Ah, now, where does it lead?
All the rooms lead out this way, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The way you came in.
The gatehouse arch, of course.
There's only one other gentleman lives here, besides myself and Mr. Tope, of course.
And who is that, may I ask?
Mr. Jasper. He's lay precentor at the cathedral. The choirmaster, you know. That's his door there.
I see.
And if that isn't Mr. Sapsey, the mayor, calling on him now, we have a very fine class of gentlemen visiting here. The cream of Cloisterham, so to speak. Mr. Sapsey, your worship.
Good day, Mrs. Tope. A fine morning.
It is, the Lord be praised.
Amen.
You'll not find Mr. Jasper in, sir. I saw him go out not 10 minutes ago dressed very smart.
Alas, there's labour wasted. Who may I ask is this gentleman?
Mr. Datchery, sir. He's thinking of taking these rooms.
Well, Mr. Datchery, I shall tell you the truth. You may do a great deal worse, believe me.
Oh, the worshipful the mayor places me under an infinite obligation for the benefit of his opinion.
Very good people, Mr. and Mrs. Tope. Very respectful.
You are very pleasant to say so, sir.
In that case, since the worshipful the mayor is prepared to occupy his valuable time in recommending the place and the people, I shall not cast a blight upon our meeting by finding the rooms unsuitable. I'll take them, Mrs. Tope.
Will your stay be a long one, may I ask?
Oh, I have an idea, Mrs. Tope, of staying here in this lovely place, in peace and quiet for the remaining span of my life.
You will not regret your decision, sir. We are an ancient city and an ecclesiastical city. And we uphold and maintain our glorious privileges.
His honour inspires me with a desire to know more of the place.
Are you a scholar, sir?
Oh, His Honour the Mayor does me too much credit.
Retired from the army, perhaps?
His Honour the Mayor does me too much credit still.
Navies?
Again, His Honour does me too much credit.
Diplomacy is a fine profession.
There, I confess, His Honour the Mayor is too many for me.
Eh?
Even a diplomatic bird must fall to such a gun.
Oh.
Oh, but I crave pardon. His Honour the Mayor will bear with me if I have been deluded into occupying his time and have forgotten the humble claims upon my own of my hotel, where I am lodged at present.
Not at all, sir. I am returning home. And if you would like to take in the exterior of our cathedral on your way, I shall be glad to point it out.
His Honour the Mayor is more than kind and gracious.
Yes.
Might I ask His Honour if the gentleman he was visiting is the gentleman of whom I have heard as being much afflicted by the loss of a nephew and bent on avenging his supposed murder?
That is the gentleman, John Jasper, sir.
And would His Honour allow me to inquire whether there are strong suspicions of anyone?
More than suspicions, all but certainties.
Only think now.
But proof, sir, proof must be built up stone by stone. The end crowns the work. That is the way I put it. It is not enough that justice should be morally certain. She must also be immorally certain.
His Honour reminds me of the true nature of the law. Immoral. My thoughts exactly.
This is our cathedral, sir. There's no need to keep your hat off in my company, you know. Pray, be covered.
His Honour is very good, but I do it for coolness.
Oh, yeah. Come this way, sir, and I shall show you something of more recent interest.
Mr. Jasper.
Miss Twinkleton's maid told me you were here in the garden. I've been waiting for some time, Miss Budd, to be summoned back to my duty.
Duty, sir?
The duty of serving you as your faithful music master.
I have left off those studies, sir.
Of course. The dreadful shock to which we've all been subject has cast all other matters from our minds for a while. But when will you resume your lessons with me?
Never, sir.
The landless girl has gone to join her brother. You have no other friends here.
I have no wish for hollow friendships.
Do you call my friendship hollow?
Take it as you wish, sir.
You wish to sever the bond between us?
Yes.
You could not say that if you'd loved my dear boy.
I did love him.
Not enough. Not as was intended or expected of you, either of you. Oh, my dear boy was not free from blame. He was too wrapped up in himself to love as he should have loved, or as anyone in his place would have loved. Must have loved.
Mr. Jasper.
I entreat you, continue with our lessons.
Please, sir, take no for an answer.
Very well, very well. Yet I must confess...
I do not wish to hear any more, sir.
Nor do I wish to entreat you further, but we must sometimes act in opposition to our wishes. You must do so now, or in refusing, do more harm to others than you could ever set right.
What harm? To whom?
There! You ask me questions, yet you forbid me to question you. That isn't fair, you know.
Oh, very well, don't answer.
But I wish you had. I wish to answer, but in a moment. Oh, dearest Rosa. Charming Rosa.
Please, sir, don't touch me.
You're afraid someone will see us from the window. Very well, I shall withdraw. I will come no nearer to you than this, I promise. Sit down, please. Ah, if anyone should see us, what harm can there be in the sight of your music master leaning apart on an old sundial and speaking with you of this and that? Remembering all that has happened and our shares in it. Sit down, beloved. Sit down! Rosa, even when my dear boy was affianced to you, I loved you madly. Even when I thought his happiness in having you for his wife was certain, I loved you madly. Even when I strove to make him more ardently devoted to you, I loved you madly. Even when he gave me the picture of your lovely face so carelessly traduced by him, I loved you madly. I endured it all in silence. So long as you were his, or so long as I supposed you to be his, I hid my secret loyally. Did I not? Answer me!
You were as false throughout, sir, as you are now. You were false to him daily and hourly. You know that you made my life unhappy by your pursuit of me. You know that you made me afraid to open his generous eyes and tell him the truth about you.
What truth, pray?
That you are an evil, evil man.
How beautiful you are. I don't ask you for your love. No, not yet. Give me yourself in your hatred. Give me yourself in that pretty rage. Give me yourself in that enchanting scorn. That will be enough for me.
I told you,
you rare charmer, you sweet witch, that you must stay and hear me or do more harm than can ever be undone. You ask me what harm. Stay and I will tell you. Go and I will do it. Now, listen. I have made my confession. I have told you that my love for you is a madness. Such a madness I own, that had the ties between me and my dear lost boy been one silken thread less strong, I would have destroyed him for your sake.
I'm going to faint.
No. You are not. You will listen. Mark what I say. Look into my eyes and judge for yourself whether I speak the truth when I say that no other admirer shall be permitted to love you and live.
Other admirer?
One whose life is in my hand.
You cannot mean...
Young Landless confessed it.
That he loved me?
That he was a rival of my lost boy.
Oh, that's nonsense.
I heard him say so.
If you really suppose that I favour Mr. Landless, or that Mr. Landless has ever in any way addressed himself to me, you are wrong.
Do you not understand? Simply to love you is an inexpiable offence in my eyes. How much worse to add to that the hideous crime of murder?
No.
Now you see why I have laboured to find a means to entrap young Landless in a net of my own devising. I have worked patiently to wind and wind it round him, and it is slowly winding as I speak.
But Neville is innocent, I know it.
We are not speaking here of innocence or guilt. Circumstances may accumulate so strongly, even against an innocent man, that directed, sharpened, and pointed, they may destroy him. So it shall be with Landless. Unless.
Unless.
Unless. You give yourself to me. I said I loved you madly. Now I shall show you how much. I'm prepared to break the oath I have sworn. To abandon my pursuit of my dear boy's murderer and henceforth to have no object in existence but your happiness only.
You dare propose to...
I dare propose to you. If it be bad to idolize you, I am the worst of men. If it be good, I am the best. My love for you is above all other love, and my truth to you is above all other truth. Let me have hope and favour, and I am a forsworn man for your sake. I reckon up nothing at this moment, angel, but the sacrifices that I lay at those dear feet. There is my fidelity to my dear boy after death. Tread upon it. There is the inexpiable offence against my adoration of you. Spurn it. There are my labours in the cause of a just vengeance for 6 toiling months. Crush them. There is my past and my present wasted life. There is the desolation of my heart and soul. There is my peace. There is my despair. Stamp them into the dust.
We are in sight of the house, sir. Get up.
There, Rosa. I am myself again. I shall not embarrass you. I shall walk calmly beside you to the house. I shall wait for some encouragement and hope. I shall not strike too soon. Give me a sign that you are listening to me.
Yes.
Then mark. Not a word of this to anyone, or it will bring down the blow as certainly as night follows day. Think what that would mean, Rosa. Not only to Neville Landless, but to his sister, your friend. Do you wish her to be disgraced? Another sign that you attend me.
No.
Remember what I say. I love you. Love you. Love you. if you were to cast me off now. But you will not. You would never be rid of me. I would pursue you to the death.
His Honor's wife lies here?
Yes. A remarkable woman, Datchery. Mm. She strove at all times to match my own qualities, measure up to my achievements, but it was a losing battle.
Of course, poor lady. Yeah. Mm. And is the epitaph of His Honor's devising?
One of our small local attractions. Strangers have been seen making a copy of it now and then. Mm. I'm no judge of it myself, being a work of my own. But it was difficult to turn the words with elegance.
If His Honor is gracious to accept the compliments of such a one as myself, I would say that there is no sign in those graven words of any labor in the writing.
Really? Here comes Durdles. He's stonemason here. Good day, Durdles.
Good day, Your Worshipful. And who is this?
Mr. Datchery. He is going to settle here.
Durdles wouldn't do it if Durdles was him. We're a heavy lot.
And you look heavier than most, if I may say so, Mr. Durdles.
Hey?
Durdles is in constant possession of 50 heavy keys, Mr. Datchery. Mention any one of them, he'll have it out of his pocket in a trice. Isn't that so, Durdles?
Done that trick once too often, Your Worshipful. Don't do it no more. Not for nobody. Durdles keeps his keys and himself. To himself.
Hey, where are you going?
To the crypt. A place a man can take his dinner in peace.
Who's there?
Mr. Grewgious.
Wait. Let me turn up the light. Gracious heavens.
It's Rosa.
Oh, my child, my child. For a moment I thought it was your mother stood before me. She was in my thoughts even now. But what has happened? What has brought you here? Who has brought you here?
No one. I came alone.
Lord bless me, came alone. Why didn't you write to me to come and fetch you?
Oh, I have no time. I took a sudden resolution. Oh, poor Eddie.
Yes, indeed, poor fellow. Poor fellow.
Oh, I'd thought he had no enemies in the world beside his foolish rivalry with Neville. And now...
Is it something to do with Jasper?
You know.
I have always had my suspicions of the man.
He tried to...
No need to tell me now. I can guess.
Oh, I cannot bear it. I have come to you to protect me and all of us from him, if you will.
I will. Damn his hide. Confound his politics. Frustrate his knavish tricks. On thee his hopes to fix. Damn him again. Oh, please excuse my little outburst, Miss Rosa, but you'll be glad to know it has made me feel much better. But tell me no more just now, or I might be tempted to do it again. Now, you must be refreshed and cheered. What will you take last? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, tea, or supper? And what will you take next? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, tea, or supper? And where shall you rest? Let it be the prettiest room in Furnival's, eh? You didn't say what meal, my dear. Shall I send out for some marmalade, eggs, watercresses, salted fish, frizzled ham, or...
I could only take a cup of tea. Thank you.
Then you are fortunate, for there's some here in the pot. Sit down. Please, please sit down. Ah, Lord bless my soul. What a new sensation for a poor old angular bachelor, to be sure.
What do you mean, sir?
The sensation of having a sweet young presence in the place that whitewashes it, paints it, papers it, decorates it with gilding, and makes it glorious.
Thank you. Do you always live here, sir?
Yes, my dear.
And
always alone?
Oh, I usually have daily company in the person of Bazzard, my clerk. Have I mentioned him to you?
You have, sir, and with great fondness.
Yes, I suppose I am fond of the fellow.
And he of you?
Oh, no, I doubt if he is. Not particularly so. You see, he's discontented, poor fellow.
Why?
Misplaced. You see, he has written a play. A tragedy.
Oh, is that all? I thought he'd done something dreadful.
Good or bad, nobody can be persuaded to put it on. But there you are. I couldn't write a play, not even a bad one, to save my life. No, not if I was about to be instantly decapitated and a messenger arrived with a pardon for the condemned convict Rugius if he wrote a play. Bazzard knows this. Consequently, he would have a sense of my inferiority to himself under any circumstances. But as I am his master, you see, the case is greatly aggravated.
How did you come to be his master, sir?
His father was a Norfolk farmer who would have furiously laid about his son with a pitchfork on the slightest hint of his having written a play.
Oh.
So the son, bringing to me the farmer's rent, which I receive, imparted his secret to me, saying that he was determined to pursue his genius, even if he must starve to do it. I told him he should do no such thing.
Pursue his genius?
Starve. So Mr. Bazzard became my clerk, and he feels it very much.
What is his tragedy called, sir?
The Thorn of Anxiety. Apt, don't you think?
Very apt.
But now I must see you safely over to Furnival's Inn. You'll be quite safe there. The stairs are fireproof, well watched and lighted. There's a stout gate of iron bars for your protection, and I live over the way.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Grewgious. I shall sleep soundly, I know.
Your breakfast will be provided for you in a neat, compact and graceful little sitting room. And I will come to you at 10 o'clock in the morning when we shall discuss what's to be done.
Mr. Grewgious...
You will want to see Miss Helena, I'm sure. But there is danger in your meeting at present.
Danger, sir?
I'll brood upon the matter. Never fear. I'll have a plan by morning.
Come in. Mr. Grewgious.
I have a visitor besides myself.
Any friend of yours is welcome.
A friend of yours, I think, too. And of all good people everywhere.
Good morning, Miss Bard. Oh,
Mr. Crisparkle.
Mr. Crisparkle in person. Come at one plunge out of the river at Cloistrum.
Perhaps I should take a swim every morning, Mr. Crisparkle, for you look the very picture of good health.
Doesn't he, though?
I wish I could say the same for you, Mr. Grewgious, but I think you slept but little last night.
What leads you to that conclusion?
Whenever I peered from my curtains, I saw a man, not unlike yourself, standing guard in the street.
What a curious circumstance.
But what brings you to Staple Inn, Mr. Crisparkle?
Well, the excuse for my visit today is to set Miss Twinkleton's mind at rest.
Well,
she came round to Mar and me as soon as she got your message from Joe, and in such a state of wonder that, to quiet her, I volunteered on this service by the very first train this morning.
I see.
But why did you not come directly to me at Minor Canon Corner?
I think... because it was too near him.
Jasper, you mean?
Quite so. I have told Mr. Crisparkle of the events that brought you here.
Have you also settled what is to be done for Miss Helena and her brother? I long to see my friend again.
There is some difficulty in a meeting at present.
Come in.
Miss Bard?
Yes, what is it?
There is a gentleman here wishes to have a word with one of your visitors.
What?
But who knows that... Which visitor does he wish to speak to?
Mr. Crisparkle.
I am Crisparkle.
Wait, is it a dark gentleman?
With black hair and a moustache?
No, miss. Brown hair and bonny blue eyes.
Not Jasper, then.
Then if Miss Rosa will allow me.
Oh, of course.
Show the gentleman in.
Yes, sir. This way, please, sir.
Thank you. Am I addressing Miss Budd?
You are, sir. And these gentlemen are Mr. Grewgious and Mr. Crisparkle. Mm.
Excuse me, Miss Budd, for interrupting your breakfast. And, gentlemen, I offer my pardon to you, too, but I think that when you know the cause, you will readily forgive me.
Who are you, sir?
I'd like to put that same question to the reverend gentleman here.
What question, sir?
Who am I?
Are you mad?
No, wait, that voice.
What will you have for breakfast this morning, Chris Buckle?
Wait a minute, give me an instant.
You're out of jam, you know, Chris Buckle.
Tartar!
Same.
My whole school fag!
My whole fag, master.
Do you wish an interpreter, Miss Rosa?
I believe I do.
It's the practice in most boys' schools for a junior to act for a time as servant to a senior. It appears that this gentleman, in his youth, served Mr. Chris Buckle.
Served? I should say so. He saved my life.
Well, how, may I ask?
I fell in a pond. Tartar here rescued me.
You couldn't swim?
No, at the time, no. But I learned soon afterwards.
Sure, bless my soul.
Amen.
Imagine this shrimp, as he was then, diving for me, catching me by the hair and striking out for the shore.
And he was my fag master. Imagine the temptation to let him sink.
Let me shake you by the hand, sir. You saved a remarkable man. His friends are beholden to you. Oh, I hope you did not get too wet. Are you quite recovered?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, if only I had learned to swim, I might have saved... Ah, but that's old history now. What did you say your name was, sir?
Tartar.
I've seen that name, have I not? As tenant of a top floor set not a stone's throw from here.
You have, sir?
And do you by any chance know the tenant of the top floor in the set adjoining, on the other side of the party wall?
I do. His name is Lambless.
Lambless? Tick that off. No personal knowledge of him, I suppose?
A slight, I might say, and recent, but some.
Tick that off, too. Nature of knowledge, Mr. Tartar.
I thought he seemed in a poor way and offered to share my flower garden with him.
I have an idea. It is not prudent at present for any of us, including, alas, Miss Rosa, to hold open communication with Mr. Neville or Miss Helena. A local friend of ours, on whom I beg to bestow a hearty malediction, sneaks to and fro and dodges up and down to find them. We have no wish to lead him to their door.
Did we do not?
However, there's no harm in leading him to the door of another party, whose staircase is on another street and whose roof...
I begin to see what you mean.
Well, I know nothing of the why and wherefore, Mr. Grewgious, but I do understand your drift, and let me say at once that if it may be of any assistance to yourselves or to the charming young lady here, my chambers are freely at your disposal.
Excellent. Let's go there now. I'll send a message on ahead to warn of our arrival. Why do you hesitate, my dear? Do you not want to see your friend?
Oh, indeed, I do. But we seem to be appropriating Mr. Tartar's residence very coolly.
I protest to you, my dear lady, that I shall think the better of it forevermore if your voice sounds in it only once.
How tidy your chambers are, Mr. Tartar.
I swear this must be the most scrubbed and burnished place under the sun.
Ship-shape's the word.
Are you influenced in all things by the sea, Tartar?
In all but my garden.
Oh, how green and beautiful it is. It's like a dream.
Come then, Miss Rosa, First Lady of the Admiralty, on a tour of inspection. Who knows what wonders you may find in beanstalk country. Now for the magic words. If anyone hears, I charge you, come forth.
Have I to say it?
Call it.
If anyone hears, I charge you, come forth. Rosa? Is that you? Helena!
Oh, yes, my darling.
I said it was like a dream. And Mr. Grewgious is here, and Mr. Chris Sparkle, and Mr. Tartar, who saved his life. All like people in a storybook.
Now, you must not forget the wicked ogre, Miss Bird.
Mr. Jasper, you mean?
Yes, he. Do you know what passed between us?
A little. I was not surprised. He is trying to destroy Neville, you know, by his constant hounding. The poor boy is a virtual prisoner here.
He offered to cease his pursuit of Neville if I gave the word. But I couldn't hold any terms with him, could I?
I would sooner see you dead at his wicked feet than do such a thing.
Oh, what a comfort your words are, Helena.
Now, I must go back to my brother. He is not well at present.
Give him my remembrance, dear, dear Helena, and ask him not to hate me.
There is no hate in him. And if there were, you would, I'm sure, be the last person to suffer it.
Goodbye, dear girl. Goodbye.
Will you come in again? My store of miracles is empty, at least for today. Tomorrow, I shall hope to have the pleasure of rowing you on a trip up the river. I have a boat moored at Greenhithe.
I've never been up the river, Mr. Tartar.
Well, Rosa, you've seen your friend. That was the first item on my list. I may strike through Helena Landless. The second, frustrate his knavish tricks, referring to Jasper, of course, must be a subject of discussion between myself and these gentlemen here.
Yes, of course.
Education, companionship, and lodging. Ah, now we're back to you, Miss Rosa. It has come into my thoughts that as that respected lady, Miss Twinkleton, occasionally repairs to London in the recess to extend her connection, we might invite her to come and stay with you for a month.
What an excellent idea.
Stay where, sir?
There is a widowed cousin of Mr. Bazzard's who lives in Southampton Street. She may be able to help us.
Name of Billiken?
Mr. Grewgious, sir. I hope I see you well.
Thank you, quite well. And you, ma'am?
I'm as well as I ever am. Come in, come in.
My ward here and an elderly lady wish to find a genteel lodging for a month or so. Have you any apartments available, ma'am?
Mr. Grewgious, I will not deceive you. Convey me to the stake if I tell a lie. I do indeed have apartments available.
What apartments, ma'am?
In here. This is the front parlour. The back parlour being what I myself cling to and will never part with.
Good.
Going with this is two bedrooms at the top of the house with gas laid on. I do not say the bedroom floors is firm, for firm they are not.
But the roof is all right, no doubt?
Mr. Grewgious, if I was to say so, I should put a deception upon you, which I will not do.
No.
You may lay dry under that roof half your lifetime. But the time will come, and it's best that you should know it, when a dripping sop will be the name for you.
Oh.
Do you have other apartments, ma'am?
The open and honest answer to your question, young lady. Yes, I have.
Good.
First and second floors is vacant, too. They're sweet, sweet rooms.
May we see them?
Mr. Grewgious, I shall not disguise it from you. You may. Follow me, if you will. Be prepared for the stairs, I beg. For unless your mind is prepared for the stairs, it will lead to inevitable disappointment.
Princess Puffer, are you alone?
Alone, dearie. Worse luck for me and better for you. Come in, come in. I'll see you, you beetle. I light a match. Yeah, I note the sound of you speaking. I'm acquainted with you and I.
Light your match and see.
You're not seafaring.
No.
Well, there's land customers and there's water customers and I'm a mother to both. Different from Jack Chinaman to the other side of the court, he's father to neither. Why? It's you.
Are you so surprised to see me?
Oh, I thought I never should have seen you again, dearie. I thought you was dead and gone to heaven.
Why?
Oh, I didn't suppose you could have kept so long away from old Princess Puffer. And you're in mourning too. Who died, may I ask?
A relative.
Oh, died of what?
Probably death.
Well, you're short tonight. Short and snappish. I believe we're out of sorts for one of a smoke. Is that what you want, dearie?
As soon as you wish.
Yeah. Now you begin to look like yourself. Now I begin to recognise my old customer. What have you been doing all this time, eh, Poppet? Been trying to mix for yourself?
I've been taking it now and then in my own way, yes.
Oh, that's a mistake. Never take it your own way. Ain't good for anyone, that. Now, wait a while, and you'll take it in artful form. You've Princess Puffer's word. And you'll admit I've got a pretty many smokes ready for you first and last, haven't I, Jackie?
A good many.
You was quite new to it when you first come, but you was able by and by to take your pipe with the rest of them. There you are, dearie. Yeah, that's just right for you.
Something wrong.
Wrong, dearie?
Yes, it's not as potent as it used to be.
Oh, it's just the same mixture, always the identical same.
It doesn't taste so.
No.
It's slower.
Oh, you just got more used to it.
Mm. Maybe so. Listen.
I'm listening, dearie.
Suppose you had something in your mind to do, but had not quite determined whether to do it or no.
Yes, dearie.
Should you do it in your fancy when you were lying here smoking?
Oh, yes, dear gentleman, over and over again.
The same did I. Over and over again. I did it hundreds of thousands of times here in this room.
I hope it was a pleasant thing you speak of.
It was. Oh, yes. It was.
What was it, this thing you speak of?
It was a journey. A difficult and dangerous journey. I took it so often, here in this room, that when it was really done, it seemed not worth the doing. It was over so soon.
Where... You alone on this journey, my ducky?
No.
Oh, you had a fellow traveller?
Yes. Poor dear fellow. But he did not understand. He made the journey a million times, and yet he had no idea. Hark.
Yes, dearie, I'm listening.
When it comes to be real at last, it is so short, it is unreal. Unreal for the first time.
What is? What is?
Hark! Time and place are both at hand. All we need is the fellow traveller.
Will you tell me his name again, my dear? His name!
The journey's done.
Oh. Say you so, my pretty gentleman. What's the smoke done for you this time, eh?
Unintelligible,
that's what you used to say when I had my little gabble. Unintelligible. Just as well it was, say I. Not as potent a drug as it once was, eh? Perhaps not at first. Or maybe it's in the mixing, my beauty. Either way, you'll talk now. Oh, Princess Puff has seen to that with her little spoon and thimble. It's in the mixing, do you see? She's learned the secret. Now... She'll learn yours, dearie. My handsome, slippery, wicked gentleman from Cloisterham. You won't give old Princess Puffer the slip again. Not this time, you won't.
Miss Budd, Miss Twinkleton, I take the liberty to look in upon you to express an hope that your dinner was to your liking.
We dined very well indeed, thank you, Mrs. Billiken.
Accustomed to a liberal and nutritious yet plain and salutary diet, we found no reason to bemoan our absence from the methodical household in which the quiet routine of our lot has been hitherto cast.
I did think it well to mention to my cook that young Miss Budd, being used to what we should consider here but a poor diet, had better be brought forward by degrees. For a rush from scanty feeding to generous feeding do require a power of constitution, which is not often found in youth, particularly when undermined by boarding school.
Your remarks, Mrs. Billiken, are well meant, But you will permit me to observe that they develop a mistaken view of the subject, which can only be imputed to your extreme want of accurate information.
My information were my own experience, which I believe is usually considered to be good guidance. I was put in youth to a very genteel boarding school, the mistress being no less a lady than yourself of about your own age, or it may be some years younger. And a poorness of blood flowed from the table which has run through my life.
Very likely. Rosa, my dear, how are you getting on with your work?
Your flow of words is great, Miss Twinkleton, and no doubt is expected from you by your pupils, and no doubt is considered worth the money, no doubt, I'm sure. But not paying for flows of words, and not asking to be favoured with them here, I wish to repeat my question.
If you refer to the poverty of your circulation...
I've used no such expressions.
If you refer, then, to the poorness of your blood...
Brought upon me at a boarding school...
Then all I can say is that I am bound to believe, on your asseveration, that it is very poor indeed. Rosa, my dear, how are you getting on with your work?
Before retiring, Miss Budd, I should wish it to be understood between yourself and me that my transactions in future is with you alone.
Yes, Mrs.
When Bacon. I have any desire to communicate a request to the person of the house, Rosa, my dear, I will make it known to you, and you will kindly undertake, I'm sure, that it is conveyed to the proper quarter.
Yes, Miss Twinkleton.
Good evening, Miss Budd. Being alone in my eyes, I wish you good evening with best wishes. And do not find myself drove, I'm truly happy to say, into expressing my contempt for an individual, unfortunately for yourself, belonging to you.
Hello? Who's there?
You, woman, who are you looking for?
Oh, the gentleman lives up this staircase, he is, sir.
What do you want with him?
Oh, nothing but he whisper. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Written there, dearie.
Surname Jasper, Christian name John.
Mr. John Jasper, eh? Hmm? Yeah. Is he calling?
Calling? Why, yes, he's a lay precentor here. Do you know what a precentor is?
What is it?
Go into the cathedral there at 7 tomorrow morning and you may see our Mr. Jasper. Oh, yes, and hear him, too, singing in the choir.
Thank you. Thank you kindly, dearie.
But you don't belong here, do you?
No, no.
You've come a long way.
Yeah, far enough.
Where will you stay tonight?
Oh, at the Traveller's Tavern. So you lock me pay.
You've been here before, then?
Yeah. Once in all my life.
All right, here's a shilling.
Oh, he gave me 3 and 6, the other gentleman.
What other gentleman?
Young gentleman I met down the road yonder.
When?
Last Christmas Eve.
Last Christmas Eve? Do you know his name?
Aye. He told me. Edwin.
Edwin.
He gave me 3 and 6.
Well, there. That should see you warmed and fed.
Oh, the Lord in heaven bless you, mister.
Right, off with you now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for a kind gentleman.
Yes, yes, yes.
Psst!
Deputy!
Aye, Mr. Dick.
I've another shilling here to be earned.
How this time, Mr. Dick?
Follow that bag of bones who just left here. She's headed for the Traveller's Tuppenny, so it should be no trouble.
What then, Mr. Dick?
Find out all you can about her. Her name, her livelihood, and her address, if she has one.
Give us all the shilling, then.
Right. That's a good deputy. Off with you now.
Right, then.
Excellent. Mrs. Tope. I believe I could do justice to some of your bread and cheese.
In An Arrival, the third part of The Mystery of Edwin Drood by Charles Dickens, completed by Leon Garfield, Ian Holm was John Jasper and John Moffat Dick Datchery. Chris Sparkle was played by Gareth Thomas, Rosa by Moya Leslie, Neville by Simon Treves, Helena by Helena Breck, and Grugius by John Gabriel. Sapsi was Timothy Bateson, Tartar Michael Cochrane, Durdles Gordon Gostillow, Deputy Susan Sheridan, Princess Puffer Mary Wimbush, Miss Twinkleton Margaret Courtney, Mrs. Billiken Margot Boyd, Joe David Googe, Mrs. Tope Anna Cropper, the Watchman Vincent Brimble, and the Maid Marcia King. The sound balance was by Dave Johnston, and the production assistant was Joe Hill. The Mystery of Edwin Drood was dramatised for radio by David Buck and directed by Gordon House.